Welcome to today's Pacific Basin 2017 interim results earnings call. I'm pleased to present CEO of Pacific Basin, Mr. Mats Berglund. For the first part of this call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards, there will be a question and answer session. Mr. Berglund, please begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Pacific Basin's 2017 interim results earnings call. As mentioned, my name is Mats Berglund, CEO, and I'm joined by our CFO, Andrew Broomhead. I will start with an overview of our results and business activities before Andrew talks you through the financials. We will then invite you to ask any questions you may have. To kick off, please turn to slide one for our interim results highlights. Demand outpaced supply in the first half of 2017, and market freight rates were significantly better than the historic lows of early last year. In this improved but still challenging trading environment, we made a much reduced underlying loss of $6.7 million, compared to $61.6 million underlying loss in the first half last year. Our EBITDA improved to positive $56.6 million from negative $5 million in the first half last year. During the half year, we completed our new building program with the delivery of seven new buildings of the latest efficient designs. We recommenced secondhand acquisitions during the first half, using the still historically weak asset values to purchase a secondhand Supramax and sell an older, smaller Supramax, thereby trading up to a vessel of better design and longer life at an attractive price. We also purchased two secondhand Handysize vessels, and by mid-year, we had expanded our own fleet to 101 ships on the water, out of about 250 ships that we operate overall. With all the ships paid for and delivered, we had cash and deposits of $248 million as of end June. Early this year, we enhanced our network further by establishing a new commercial office in Rio de Janeiro, which has generated valuable new business. In May, we relocated our headquarters about 15 minutes out of Hong Kong's central business district, and we now benefit from a better, more energized, and collaborative office, which is great, especially since we are also saving $2 million per year in rent going forward. Importantly, we continue to achieve reductions in our vessel operating and G&A costs per day, thereby lowering our own ships' break-even levels further. Please turn to slide two. Our Handysize and Supramax net daily TCE earnings of about $7,900 and $8,900 per day outperformed the Baltic Handysize and Supramax spot market indexes by 20% and 11%, respectively. As part of our business model, we charter in vessels for short periods, which we combine with cargoes to make a margin irrespective of whether the market is high or low. If we exclude the vessel days attributable to these short-term ships and factor their positive margin into the TCE results of our core owned and long-term fleet, as many other companies do in their reporting, then our restated daily earnings would improve to $8,010 for Handysize and $9,890 per day for Supramax, although on fewer days. As at 26th of July, we had covered 57% of our Handysize days for the second half of 2017 at $8,360 per day, and 80% of our Supramax days at $9,830 per day. Slide three, please. Overall demand for dry bulk shipping in the first quarter grew by 4.9% year-on-year, outpacing supply growth of 3.4%. While we do not yet have Clarkson data for the second quarter, we expect that it will continue to show an improved supply-demand balance. That helps to explain the improving freight market, which so far in 2017 is tracking a similar pattern to the previous 2 years, but at significantly higher rate levels to the historic lows of last year. Note from the graph that the first half includes the typically weak period over Chinese New Year. Key drivers are demand through the first half, included improved North and South American grain exports, higher imports of coal into Southeast Asia, and a strong increase of Chinese imports, with minor bulk imports outpacing iron ore and coal. Minor bulk imports to China, of the 8 minor bulks that we track, including soybean, grew with 15% in the first half. Slide 4. As you can see in this slide, Supramax market freight rates in the year to date have followed a similar pattern to Handys as they typically do, but at a higher level. And note the improved rate levels over the last 4 or 5 weeks in both the segments. Please turn to slide 5. Market freight rates in the Atlantic were mostly stronger than the Pacific in the first half of 2017. This is not unusual, recently due to strong Atlantic grain volumes, but also due to the larger supply of ships in the Far East, which is a major discharge area, and where a lot of new building deliveries enter the market early in the year. Slide 6. For the full year 2017, Clarkson estimates that global dry bulk trade volumes will grow with 3.5% year-on-year, and overall effective demand will grow by about 3.9% basis, reflecting longer average distances. As reported, growth has been higher than this level so far this year. Soybean, wheat, and other grains are showing strong growth, and we feel this is a solid positive trend, driven primarily by increasing demand for animal feed in Asia, caused by growing middle class eating more meat. The steel shipments are forecasted to reduce slightly due to smaller exports from China, much due to very strong domestic demand for Chinese steel. Slide 7, and turning to the supply side, the dry bulk order book continues to shrink. Dry bulk new building deliveries in the first half have fallen short of scheduled deliveries by around 38%, or 49% looking just at Handysize deliveries. And we expect actual deliveries in the full year will be around 38 to 44 million deadweight tons. This is equivalent to about 5% of the existing fleet this year, down from 6% last year. But due to better market conditions, scrapping has reduced from an annualized 4% last year to an annualized 2% this year, pointing to an estimated net fleet growth of 3% for the full year 2017. 5% deliveries, less 2% scrapping, for 3% net roughly for the full year 2017. Positively, new ship ordering in our segments has been minimal in the last 18 months. In our view, ship owners have been and will continue to be discouraged from ordering new ships for a few reasons. First, secondhand values at today's levels continue to make them more attractive than ordering new buildings. Secondly, new low sulfur and ballast water treatment system rules cause uncertainty about ship designs. And thirdly, new accounting rules from 2019 will require the capitalization of long-term time charters. Many dry bulk ship owners' balance sheets are already leveraged, so they are not likely to take more long-term time charters, and the lack of new time charters will discourage new orders, since much of the ordering used to be financed against the long-term charters, especially in Japan and especially in our segments. This limited new ship ordering and the shrinking order book, combined with the new environmental regulations penalizing older and poor design ships more, bodes well for the long-term supply-demand balance. Slide 8. Improved freight market conditions overall have supported sale and purchase activity and increased vessel values. Clarksons currently value a benchmark 5-year-old Handysize at $14 million. While price levels are up from a year ago, they are still at historically low levels, below the low of the 2013 bottom, and we see continued upside in values. New building prices have increased 10% since the beginning of the year to $21.5 million. And as I mentioned a moment ago, the gap between new building and second-hand prices continues to discourage new ship ordering, which is helpful to keep supply lower in the long term. Slide 9. To recap, this slide combines Clarkson's demand and supply growth levels in one chart. We are back from the shrinking demand of 2015, and the graph shows demand recovering and outpacing supply in the first quarter 2017. And data for the second quarter will likely also show an improved demand-supply balance. For the full year, Clarkson estimate effective demand will be 3.9%, and we estimate net supply growth, as mentioned, will be around 3%. So more demand than supply is forecasted for the first time since 2013. With limited new ship ordering and a shrinking order book, progressively fewer new ships will deliver from shipyards in 2018 and 2019. And this will be positive for market fundamentals in the future. I will be back shortly with a wrap-up, but I now hand you over to Andrew, who will present the financials. Andrew.
Thank you very much, Matt. Slide 10, first half financial highlights. The group reported an underlying loss of $6.7 million, which has reduced substantially from last year's interim results due to the improved market conditions. The loss attributable to shareholders was $12 million, affected by, firstly, a $2.6 million non-cash mark-to-market loss mainly on our bunker swaps. These are used to hedge our fuel exposure on forward cargo cover and will be balanced by a corresponding benefit in our fixed rate forward cargo contracts. Secondly, $1.4 million one-off office relocation costs as we moved our Hong Kong headquarters from central to the southern part of Hong Kong Island, which will result in significant G&A cost savings over the coming 6 years. Thirdly, $0.9 million impairment on the final two tugs, sales of which will complete in the second half of 2017. And lastly, a $0.4 million book loss from the completed sales of two towage vessels and one Supramax. Slide 11, vessel segments. Our Handysize and Supramax revenue days increased by 11 and 22% respectively year on year. This is due to a bigger owned fleet, but also our increased use of short-term chartered-in vessels. Both our Handysize and Supramax contributions returned to positive territory as we levered our business model to outperform in the improved but still challenging market. Handysize TCE earnings increased by 30% to $7,920 per day, whilst blended daily costs increased by 3% compared to the first half of last year. This resulted in Handysize contributing a profit of $7.8 million, which is a significant improvement compared to the loss of $30 million in the same period last year. Our Supramax TCE earnings increased by 51% to $8,920 per day. The blended daily cost increased by 31% as we chartered in short-term vessels at higher market rates compared to the same period last year. The overall Supramax contribution was a profit of $9.1 million compared to a loss of $6.8 million in the first half of 2016. If we only look at the core fleet and exclude the operating short-term days, the total revenue days would have reduced to 21,460 days for Handysize and 8,980 days for Supramax, giving a daily TCE improvement of $90 per day for Handysize and $970 per day for Supramax. Slide 12, balance sheet. Our owned fleet includes 79 delivered Handysize vessels with an average book value of $15.6 million and an average age of 9.4 years, and 21 delivered Supramax vessels with an average book value of $22.8 million and an average age of 6.3 years. At the end of June, cash and deposits were at $248 million, with a net borrowing position of $704 million, giving a net gearing of 40%, which was below our KPI of up to 50%. The increase in net gearing from 34% at the end of last year is primarily due to the CapEx paid in relation to our seven new buildings delivered during the period, drawing down the associated export credit facilities, and using our cash for the purchases of second-hand vessels. We remain in compliance with our loan covenants. Slide 13. Handysize blended operating costs of $7,550 per day increased 3% compared to the full year 2016, which is mainly due to the higher cost of the chartered-in fleet as the dry bulk market improved in the first half, making short-term chartered-in ships more expensive. However, this is partly offset by a lower cost for the owned fleet, where OpEx further reduced by $150, or 4%, to $3,820 per day, mainly due to scale benefits and procurement cost efficiencies. The proportion of owned to chartered vessel days was maintained at 53%-47%. The breakout graph on the right shows the different daily chartered-in costs split between sub-one-year short-term, over one-year long-term, and index charters. Slide 14. Supramax blended operating costs of $8,360 per day increased 22% compared to the full year 2016, which is again mainly due to the higher cost for short-term chartered-in vessels in the improved dry bulk market. Similar to Handysize, our owned vessel cost for Supramax is lower by 4%, and OpEx is down by $310, or 8%, to $3,770 per day. The proportion of owned to chartered vessels remains at about 20%-80%. Overall, our overheads per Handysize and Supramax ship reduced from $680 per day to $590 per day. The group's total G&A for the first half reduced to $26.2 million from $27.4 million, reflecting the continued benefit of a range of cost-saving initiatives. Slide 15, borrowing and CapEx. After taking delivery of our final seven new buildings, we had no vessel commitments at the 30th of June. At the end of June, we had $836 million in secured borrowings, which was secured by 96 vessels, leaving five unmortgaged dry bulk vessels, and we had drawn down all remaining loan facilities. Our convertible bond, with an outstanding principal of $125 million, has a maturity date in July 2021, with an investor's put option in July 2019. Slide 16, cash flow. The group generated operating cash inflows of $48 million for the period. This compares strongly with $80 million in the first half of 2016 and $50 million in the full year 2016. In addition, we generated $8 million in cash from the sale of two tugs and a Supramax vessel. CapEx of $168 million during the period included 10 vessels delivered to our owned fleet, comprising seven new buildings, of which four are Handysize and three are Supramax, and three secondhand vessels, comprising two Handysize and one Supramax. Our net increase in borrowings of $106 million reflects, firstly, drawdown of $158 million, comprising $140 million under Japanese export credit facilities and $18 million under other borrowings. Secondly, net repayment of $52 million of bank borrowings and revolving facilities. The overall result was that our cash and deposit balance stood at $248 million at the period end. Now I would like to hand back to Mats.
Thank you, Andrew. Slide 17. I will wrap up with two slides, starting with a brief recap of our business model and the factors that enable us to outperform index rates. This is a strong platform and worthwhile emphasizing. Unlike the Capesize and Panamax segments, our Handysize and Supramax segments benefit from diverse cargoes, customers, and trading geography. These trades are operationally intense, and having skilled and experienced staff, a global office network, and a large quality fleet of efficient, interchangeable ships really makes a difference. Drawing on all these components of our business model, we typically achieve a laden versus ballast ratio of over 90%. This is key to generating an average Handysize TCE premium of over $2,000 per day over index rates in the past 5 years, and an average Supramax TCE premium of about $1,350 per day. Slide 18. Looking ahead, we believe the worst of the current dry bulk market cycle is behind us. Demand for agriculture products and construction material, our two largest cargo groups, is growing and should continue to benefit from increasing grain volumes and more infrastructure investments in China and the U.S. The shrinking order book also bodes well for dry bulk shipping in the long term, but more time, scrapping, and limited ordering are required for a more normal market balance to be sustained. We will stay focused on our world-leading Handysize and Supramax business and continue to make the most of our business model to maximize our fleet's utilization and TCE earnings. We will continue to assess attractive ship acquisition opportunities to grow and renew our fleet with modern, high-quality secondhand ships or resales that can generate a reasonable payback and cash flow even in a challenging market, and that can reduce our average daily break-even levels further. Our healthy cash and net gearing positions contribute to the strong corporate profile that sets us apart as a preferred, strong, reliable, and safe partner for our customers and other stakeholders. We are well-positioned for a recovering market. Thank you very much for listening, and we open the floor now for any questions you may have. Operator.
Thank you. We now begin our question and answer session. If you have questions for any of today's speakers, please press 01 on your telephone keypad and you will enter a queue. After you are announced, please ask a question. If you find that your question has been answered before it's your turn to speak, please press 02 to cancel the question. Once again, please press 01 on your telephone keypad to ask a question. first question is Fuji Berry from Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Yeah, hi, it's Paul Dewberry here. Thanks for the call. I had a question regarding the ballast water. Could you give us an update? It appears the regulatory environment suggests that the regulations around ballast water has been pushed back 2 years. Is that correct? And in that case, are the prospects for an increase in demolition of the older vessels also pushed back, and therefore perhaps hopes for a strong recovery next year a little dimmed? Could I have your view on that, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. There have always been the ability to spread out the compliance with the new ballast water treatment rules over a 5-year period. As we have guided before, our own plans to install ballast water treatment systems is spread starting in 2019 and through 2023. The change in the IMO regulation that happened a few months ago does not materially change that plan, and we suspect it's about the same for most other ship owners. So the compliance with these rules have always been spread out, and it's the next dry docking that governs when you need to install it. However, the U.S. Coast Guard rules have nothing to do with IMO. And we think that it's the U.S. Coast Guard rules that will be the deadline here. And so far, they have only approved 4 systems, and they have given exemptions from installing. And we have such exemptions through 2018, and hence we will start to install systems in our plan 2019. But, you know, as the U.S. Coast Guard type approves more ballast water treatment systems, we think it's likely that they will stop giving exemptions. And if you want to trade to the U.S., you're going to have to comply with these rules. We do think that the low sulfur rules is a different story, and that is a cliff regulation that kicks in January 1, 2020. You can comply with these emissions rules in 2 ways. Either you burn a cleaner fuel or you install scrubbers. We think that the industry will burn cleaner fuel, because that's the more efficient overall solution and the more likely scenario. It's very inefficient to install scrubbers on every single ship in the fleet. Practically impossible to do that. For so many ships. So why do we think that is positive? That is because as per the forward curve, the low sulfur fuel is significantly more expensive than the high sulfur fuel, and a high bunker price, as we have mentioned many times before, we believe is very positive for the supply-demand balance, because it will reduce speeds. All things equal, a higher fuel price will lower the speed. And it will also penalize poor-performing ships. You know, high fuel consumption ships and older ships will be disadvantaged if the fuel price is higher. So we do think that these regulations are positive, and that it will drive scrapping over time, but we have never believed that, you know, in the very short term, the ballast water treatment rules will have a direct scrapping impact.
Okay, thanks, Matt.
Once again, if you have a question for any of today's speakers, please press 01 on your telephone keypad.
There's a question online from Parash at HSBC. The question is, what's the CapEx guidance for the rest of the year and 2018? So starting with that, I think Andrew was clear there. You want to repeat?
Sure. Well, on the 30th of June, as we commented, we had no commitments. The ballast water treatment system will be some capex in due course, but there's no commitments at the current time. And as Matt has indicated, you know, we have a plan in place, but it doesn't kick in before 2019. And as Matt's also highlighted in his summary slide, we have started making acquisitions of vessels, and we continue to assess attractive second-hand opportunities. But at the moment, there is no fixed capex expenditure.
Second question is, what's the outlook of minor bulk grain given risk of corn destocking by China and good domestic crop? We are positive about the outlook for grain, not only into China but also to other Asia. And as mentioned, it's driven by changed eating habits, people eating more protein, pork in particular, and Asia, China doesn't have enough land and water to grow their own crop, and we see very strong demand increases for soybean in particular, going long distance primarily from Brazil. There's always been a worry about large corn stocks in China and that these may be released and that will, affect imports. But, that's been the same for many years. Many people feel that these corn stocks may have gone bad. They've been sitting there for a long time. We have no inside intelligence on that, but grain demand is good overall, and again, not only China. The full year estimate for soybean is 7-8%, and for grain 4-5%. But it's been higher than that so far this year, so positive. Go on to another online question from Mark Hodge. There's been a recent increase in ordering of new bulk ships. Please comment on how you see this affecting the dry bulk shipping market. The new build ordering remains very limited, and it's down to a virtual zero in our segments over the last 18 months. There have been some new orders, but that's been primarily in the Kamsarmax segments, larger segments than our segments. There are a few ships ordered also in our segment, but I think our slide number, turning to it, 7, have the annualized ordering in our segments to 0.5 and 0.7% respectively. Right, so this is a very low level, and we laid out the reasons for why we think new build ordering, in our view, will continue to be limited, much due to the industry being a bit in a wait-and-see mode on these environmental regulations and how the industry will act on these low sulfur rules, etc. Even if you wanted to order a ship today, I would worry about which design to order, with a scrubber, without a scrubber, which ballast water treatment system, etc. And I think this uncertainty is leading to fewer orders, and we need to remember also that you need at least $10,000 per day to make a decent return on a new Handysize, and we are not at these levels, and until we get there, the supply side should correct such that the market tightens until we reach that level. Another online question from Qi Chen Shen. When are you expecting to go back to profit? Well, we are not giving exact forecasts like that, but we try to be as transparent as we possibly can on our break-even levels and on our forward cover. And we can point you to our break-even levels, our cost structure in my slide 13 and 14. Slide 13 on the handy sizes. Point you to the owned handy sizes having a break-even level of 7,480 during the first half 2017. You need to add to that the G&A, which we guide being 590 per day. So add these two together, you're at $8,100 per day. I can also guide you to our forward cover for handy size, which is 8,360 per day, 57% of our days. That's at a level slightly above our break-even level, also after G&A. For Supramax, our costs for the owned ships for the first half 2017 is 8,220 as per slide 14. And again, add the G&A of $600 per day, you get to $8,800 per day. And our forward cover for the Supramax is about $9,800 per day, so also slightly above the break-even levels. Now that's our own ships, and then in addition you have the roughly 30 long-term charters which are loss-making at these levels. You can see that from the disclosure in our interim report what the average charter-in rates are on the long-term charters in. But we also typically make a profit on our fairly significant short-term activity that offsets or more than offsets the losses on the long-term charters. So that's the guidance we can give. But, you know, profit for the full year obviously depends on the market development over the rest of the year. Another online question, Michael Holman, correspondent with Fairplay magazine. Question is, what's the outlook for the steel trades from Handysize perspective, given ongoing strong production growth in China, but also in India? Cargo contract, maybe we'll take one at a time. So sticking to the first one, what's the outlook for the steel trades from Handysize perspective? Well, we gave the guidance that steel trades overall is expected to reduce slightly for the full year. I think Clarkson have steel shrinking with 3% or something for the full year. And that is due to lower exports out of China, which is not due to lack of demand. There's enormous strong production growth, as you point out, in China. But domestic demand is so strong. Chinese steel prices are going up, so the traders are finding the Chinese steel too expensive, and they're using other sources to pick their steel from India and other places. But this also leads to slightly lower volumes, which takes the Chinese exports sometimes from a Supramax to a Handysize. So getting into a bit of detail here, right? But your question is specifically for Handysize, and we've seen more steel exports in Handysize than in Supramax, is partly due to the volumes coming down, so it's going in smaller sizes. Next question, cargo / contracting trends for PB in this segment. Well, again, no major change other than what I already guided there. And then it goes on, and how do you see ship acquisition opportunities developing? As mentioned, we will continue to assess acquisition opportunities for good quality second-hand ships or resale that, you know, can lower our break-even levels, etc., and where we feel we can make a margin even in a challenging market. We do not anticipate ordering new buildings for forward delivery in 19 or 20. We would really want the industry, including us, to let the market come to us this time, and we encourage people to to, if you want to buy ships, buy existing ships and do not add to the order book.
And our next question is Andrew Lee at Jefferies. Please proceed with the question.
Yep. Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking time for the call. I have two questions. You mentioned that you're going to expand into buying more second-hand vessels. Do you have a target in terms of how many you're looking at this year, next year? And will that be focusing on the Handymax or the Supramax? The second question is on the tax side. In the first half, you had a tax credit. For the full year, do you think that will be reversed? Thanks.
So the first question on buying second-hand ships. We do not provide specific guidance on that, but we are always looking for good opportunities. It has to be good ships that are suitable for our trades, and we will be opportunistic to that extent. And if we see attractive opportunities, we will look very seriously at them. And it's very difficult to kind of give specific targets on that because it depends on good ships becoming available. We bought one Supramax and two Handysize ships, as mentioned, in the first half. Andrew, second question was on tax, I believe.
Sure. On the tax, actually relates to the towage business, so that's the reason there was a credit. So that clearly is a one-off as we wind down that part of the business, and you can see that we have now sold, we've actually sold the last two vessels, but they weren't complete until the second half of the year. So that is something that will not be repeated.
Okay, thanks.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on the telephone keypad. The next question is Varun from JP Morgan.
Hi. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for the call. I have two quick questions. Number one is, when do you think the new building market, for the ship owners to go to the new building market will be more attractive? Right now, the discount is like 30%, second-hand vessels versus new build vessels. So is it like when they come more on parity, that would be the ideal time to go into the new building order market? And second question is, recently we saw credit tightening measures in China. Did you face any impact in terms of cargo owners on the ground, or the traders? Like, did they face any financing issues which led to any impact on the demand side because of those measures? And if those continue into the second half, how do you plan to counter that? Those would be the two questions from my side.
Sorry, can you just repeat the second question? Which measures? So you broken up a bit.
Credit tightening measures undertaken in China recently, where they tried to, be there on the shadow market side, that are trying to tighten the measures there, which created a lot of issues, So did you face any issues with your cargo owners, your customers? Did they face any financing issues in China because of those measures undertaken? And if those continues into the second half of this year, how do you plan to counter that? Will you have any impact from that on the demand side?
Okay, got it. First question, when will the new building market be more attractive? And I think that freight rates have to come up before people will consider new buildings. Second-hand values will only go up in value if freight rates go up in value, and Again, even if they would, you have these uncertainties. Again, I repeat, maybe this is a bit complex, and I apologize for that, right? But in the Handysize and Supramax segment, the biggest nationality owner is Japan, and a lot of the ships that are out there in our segments are owned by small or medium-sized Japanese owners, and they're time-shorted to operators or owners. This activity is really drying up because of the lack of time-charter requirements, right? Again, if you already have time-charters in your balance sheet, you're going to have to capitalize them, and you know, there's so many reasons for why there's not many time-charters out there. And this, you know, a lot of the historical ordering has been created by Japanese owners ordering a new building for tax reasons. They need tax depreciation, but they also need a time charter to finance the ship against with a local bank. And since there are very few time charters, the ordering activity is slow, and we believe that this will continue. On the credit tightening measures in China, Andrew, do you want to?
Well, I think there's a couple of points to bear in mind in relation to your question. The first is that a lot of the cargoes that were moving into China are moving into China and not out of China, so that the China tightening measures would not have an impact. Another point to bear in mind is the method of payment within the dry bulk, in that you are paid up front, so that we would need to have the money before we actually made the shipment. So the tightening is not going to have any tangible effect on, for example, bad debt provisions, if that was part of your concern. I suppose the more market-orientated question about whether continued tightening would likely to reduce the cargoes which are being exported, slightly bigger question that. I mean, I think if we look over the last few years, we can see there are periods of tightening and then periods of release. So government tends to use this for specific purposes for fairly limited periods of time. So I would say in summary that we don't see this as a significant threat at the current time.
And again, Chinese imports are growing at very healthy levels so far this year.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Another question online. You report EBITDA of 56.6 million for first half 17. Could you break out this number for your charter in and owned fleet? No, unfortunately, that's not part of our normal guidance, so apologize for that. Sorry.
If there are no further questions, we'll now begin closing comments. Please go ahead, Mr. Mats Berglund.
All right. Again, thank you very much for your interest in our company. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your continued support. Thank you.
This concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending.